When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I walk a straight line, shackle and chain. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango the Three.
Hey, and welcome back to Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. And I'm Jim Chapman. Woody Overton is not with us today. He is traveling. So, y'all, what we're bringing you today is Death Man Part 2. And if first off, if you have not heard episode 1 of this series, then go back and check it out. Trust me, it's fire. But we told you in episode 1 that we were going to catch you all the way up to where we talked about executioners right here in the state of Louisiana. So we're going to continue with that series covering the executions. And the last time we left you on quite a journey all around the world. Finally, we're back in Louisiana. And we're going to tell you about the first legal execution in the state of Louisiana. And that can be traced all the way back to 1722. Now, since then, the state has performed nearly 1,000 executions. Oddly enough, Louisiana holds the dubious distinction, y'all, of being the only state to use decapitation as a form of execution way back in the 1700s. And Louisiana was known as a pretty brutal state when it came to executions in those days. So I'm going to tell y'all all a story about those early days. In 1754, there was a group of soldiers at Louisiana's Cat Island who decided to mutiny. They murdered their commander as well as an officer. His name was DeRue. Good old Cajun name right there. Now, they were caught, and the governor at the time decided to make an example out of four of the soldiers. Three of the soldiers were strapped naked to a wheel, and their bodies were stretched. Then they had each bone in their body broken with a sledgehammer. But get this, before that occurred, they were ordered to execute the fourth soldier themselves. How did they do it? Well, they were ordered to securely nail the fourth soldier to a wooden box and then saw him in half. That's crazy. Man, they were rough back in those days. And if you think that's crazy, listen to this. During the period of where hangings took place at the parish where the condemned was sentenced, if you'll remember, we've talked many times about that, there was a man by the name of Henry Mayer. He was known as the Hangman of New Orleans. Now, Henry Mayer went by an alias, Hangman Duffy. And he, I know that's a strange alias, but Hangman Duffy was his alias, as most of these executioners have an alias, and we'll get into more of those. Now, he kept his part-time job a guarded secret, meaning that hangman job. His wife didn't even know he was a hangman. After her death in 1928, Mayer got careless with his secret, and soon the public, they kind of looked at him almost like a morbid hero or something. They had a fascination with him, and they shunned him, though, in public because it just didn't look proper. They were fascinated by this guy, though, and they couldn't wait to see what newspapers would publish about him next. Few kind words were written about Mayer, as you can imagine, and it didn't help that he was also a notorious drunk. He didn't mind people looking down on him. It didn't bother him really at all. He could care less. But in 1934, he botched a hanging so that the convicted murderers were nearly decapitated by the ropes he tied to their necks. The newspapers, they slammed Mayer for this. And public sentiment overwhelmed, him and really political folks back in those days, and they started looking for a more humane method of execution than hangings. It was directly related to this incident. Now, after this incident, Mayer refused to speak about his career, if you will, to anyone. In all, Mayer was the hangman of 38 men and the first woman to be legally executed in the state of Louisiana. Now, it's said that he drank heavily before each execution, and he would appear at the gallows and actually shake hands with a real nervous demeanor. Didn't seem like he was comfortable with it, but, 38 men and one woman at that point in time? Wow. He wore a dirty, faded purple mask over his face to do the deed, and he received about $75 per hanging. And when he was paid, he took a bit of that money to pay for his burial insurance. The rest, it's said, that he spent on booze. Now, in his final years, he was known to throw parties at a shack on a levee until the money ran out and he found himself, well, friendless again. Mayer was destitute when he died of heart failure at Charity Hospital in 1935 in New Orleans. On his deathbed, this is going to trip you out, he became delirious and dreamed of ghosts of all those hanged men coming to get him. And he would scream just sporadically, "Get them off. They're trying to kill me." He died shortly after. His funeral was poorly attended. Only one relative came to see his uncle laid to rest in that satin-laced coffin. And we have a picture of the house in New Orleans that still stands today, his actual house that he lived in, and we'll post that on the Patreon page so you can see it. So, very interestingly, I went through and scoured the internet, and I actually came across his obituary. His death announcement, if you will. And I'm going to read that to you because it's kind of interesting. It says, Harry Mayer, 73-year-old professional hangman, kept his 40th rendezvous with death last night. 39 times, the veteran executioner ascended the scaffold and calmly sprung the trap that sent 38 condemned men and one woman to their deaths. Last night, he followed them. The heart that enabled him to drop with steady hands, hoods over the condemned as priests and ministers repeated prayers with them, beat his last at Charity Hospital at 5:45 p.m. To Harry Mayer, hanging a condemned person was just another means of making a living. He often boasted that he had no belief in immortality, but as the end approached, he asked for and received the last sacrament of the Roman Catholic Church. He summed his philosophy up in a single sentence. I just think when you're dead, you're blowed up. Wow. For 18 years, he served as the official executioner for Orleans Parish. He performed his duty with a matter-of-factness that awed those who attended those executions, but a hanging just didn't bother Henry Mayer. The way I feel about it is that the jury found him guilty, he once said. The court sentences them, and the judge swears me in as the deputy sheriff to carry out the law. I'd hang my own brother if I had one, if he committed himself. Wow. He was proud of his ability to tie a perfect hangman knot and was a ready conversationalist about any execution at which he officiated. His pockets usually were cluttered with newspaper clippings of men sentenced to death in Louisiana and of the hangings. He'd sprung his first death trap 18 years ago and received $75, lost his job on a construction project, and became a professional hangman. He was employed as an iron worker on a construction project at the time, and when his boss discovered he had hanged a man, he immediately discharged him. Until the last few years, he supplemented his earnings from hangings with a little carpentry work. His wife died several years ago. Jobs became scarce, and he lost his home. 2 years ago, he was given quarters at the parish prison where he also had his meals. He received $75 for each person he hanged, but he couldn't keep his money. After each execution, he gave a party for his friends along the Mississippi riverfront. They ate his food, drank his liquor, and spent his hanging earnings. But there was one thing Henry Mayer always did after each execution. He paid for he paid up an insurance policy he carried to make sure his only request would be granted, a decent burial beside his wife in St. Mary's Cemetery. That was given to him today. So that is the obit of the New Orleans hangman, Harry Mayer. Crazy. Now, in 1941, Louisiana switched to what was known as the electric chair. Gruesome Gertie for all of our avid listeners. And until 1961, a guy by the name of Grady Jarrett was the official Gruesome Gertie executioner. Now, prior to 1957, when executions were transferred to Bloody Angola, Jarrett was the man who threw the switch in the back of the truck for traveling executions. Those trucks went from parish to parish and had an inmate electrician, a prison chief electrician, and either a security officer or captain would go along. Now, in 1949, Jarrett traveled to Opelousas to execute two individuals. Listen to this story, y'all. Matthew and Joe Cook, they were brothers, and they had killed a very prominent local man and his young girlfriend. As Jarrett pulled the switch, he yelled, "Goodbye, Matt." Same thing with Joe. That was like his thing, y'all. He did it with every execution. He would say goodbye and then their name, almost like he enjoyed it. He performed six double executions in his day, but only one of those were performed at Bloody Angola. Now, on April 8th of 1958, Tangipahoa Sheriff Tom Sanders brought two inmates, a guy by the name of Alfred Fasani and John McMiller, to two isolation cells at the Red Hat cell block. They had robbed a small country store in the parish, and they had held a gun on an elderly man at the counter. His 14-year-old son walked into the store from the back door. He was unaware of what was going on, and they turned around and shot and killed that 14-year-old. Both were executed via Gruesome Gertie back to back. That was that double execution, the only one that he performed there. Now, Jarrett was a heavyset man. He was about 5'9", and he always wore a cowboy hat. He would come in 2 days prior to the execution and go through the chair with a fine-tooth comb, even checking the leather straps. He would bend them. And if they even showed so much as a crack, y'all, he would replace them. He would even bring his son along with him to those executions and show him exactly how they were performed and teach him how to do it. However, in 1961, he performed his last execution. That was of inmate Jesse James Ferguson, and a moratorium at that time was placed on executions just shortly thereafter. Grady Jarrett died before executions were started back up in 1976, and Louisiana had to find another executioner. So after that moratorium, it did end in 76, but that's not when Louisiana started theirs back up. And it's important to note there that you see how serious he took his job. I mean, he would go in 2 days ahead of time and start checking equipment and stuff like that. So I want to give you, or I want to read to you an article written on Grady Jarrett that will give you a little more insight into who he was. And this article appeared in the Gaydon News, and this was in 1951. And Gaydon is a small fishing community down on the coast, way south Louisiana, y'all. It says, Grady Jarrett has killed 62 men and women. Grady Jarrett of Shreveport, official executioner of the state of Louisiana, showed no hint in his appearance, his face, or even his eyes of the grim profession he pursues. It was he who flipped the switch last Friday at noon with a loud, clear word. Goodbye, William. That sent the soul of William Alleman winging into eternity at 10 minutes past 12 in the Lafayette Parish Courthouse at Lafayette. It's much like any other job, said Jarrett calmly in the execution chamber anteroom. It's all in a day's work. I get no pleasure from it, no feelings nor pangs of regret. Were you to meet him on the street, you would never suspect his grim occupation. You might take him for a lawyer, or perhaps a clothing merchant, or perhaps a railroad man looking forward to retirement after years of service. There's nothing about him that suggests the work that he does. Were you to sit across from him in a restaurant, he'd probably smile as he passed the salt and make some remark about the weather. The smile would warp his good humor, etc. The execution last Friday at Lafayette was Jarrett's 62nd official execution since the state installed the electric chair at Angola to be used about the state in various parishes in extracting the supreme penalty for the crime. 61 men and a woman have looked into the almost kindly benign face of Jarrett and noted the calm blue eyes as he checked the electrodes and heard his voice bid them goodbye. A lifetime of work as a peace officer is the record of the tall, slightly stooped, slightly balding state executioner. He has killed 14 men in 11 gunfights during that time. It is much to be preferred to meet those calm blue eyes over a coffee cup than have them regarding you in that calm, impersonal manner. What sort of time frame does he work himself into before throwing the switch, which snuffs out the life of a human being? Does he sleep well, or do the faces of dead men haunt the dreams? These are questions that people wonder. If a man killed your father or mother or brother or sister or your wife or child, what would you or I do? Grady Jarrett asked. You would feel like killing him, wouldn't you? It's the duty of a peace officer to prevent you from doing that, because two wrongs don't make a right. When the criminal has been tried and convicted, it's my duty to execute them. I do it without hesitancy. I feel I am acting for the wrongs done. My conscience is perfectly clear, and the only emotion I feel is pride in a difficult job. Well done. In short, Grady Jarrett approaches and performs his job and sleeps deeply, peacefully, and calmly without disturbed dreams after an execution. So that was an article that was written regarding Grady Jarrett. And as I said, he did die before they reinstated those executions in 1976. So I'll bring you to 1976, and those executions were reinstated, but Louisiana had one problem: no executioner. In 1983, by the time their next execution came around, they solved that problem by instituting the services of a Baton Rouge electrician who went by the name of Sam Jones. Now, Sam Jones was an alias. How did he get hired? He was referred to then warden Frank Blackburn. He took the civil service exam. He passed that exam and he was in. Congratulations, you passed the test. You're the official executioner. Hey, y'all, it may be moving towards the end of another summer, but that doesn't mean I can quit watching what I eat. We all know home-cooked meals are so much better for you, but you don't always have time to pull it off. But with HelloFresh handling all the meal planning, shopping, and most of the prep, it's easier than ever to get dinner on the table quick and painless. There's always new flavors to explore with an ever-changing menu of 50 recipes to choose from every week. Just pick your meals and your delivery date. It's that simple. With summer in the rearview mirror and busier days ahead, now is the perfect time to save money when it comes to your dinner routine. Skip the meal planning and grocery store lines and cut down on food waste with HelloFresh's convenient doorstep delivery and pre-measured ingredients. My favorite aspect of HelloFresh is the vast array of menu options. Look, I can burn out on eating the same things over and over again, but with HelloFresh, I don't ever run out of options. Y'all, I tried the spinach one pan chicken last week, and all I can say is my mouth is still watering. It was that good. For free breakfast for life, go to HelloFresh.com/freebloodyangola. One free breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life just by going to HelloFresh.com/freebloodyangola. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
For Gruesome Gertie. Now, people have interviewed this guy, and I'm going to cover some of that. And a question, one of the questions that was asked was, why be an executioner? And Sam said he believed in it. That he was a person that put his money where his mouth was, and that if he believed that in capital punishment, he should be willing to be the one who saw the punishment through till the end. Now, he said the money that he makes per execution has absolutely nothing to do with it. He noted that he only gets $400 per execution. So in 1983, he performed his first execution of Robert Wayne Williams. And afterward, he was asked about what it was like to perform his first execution. And he stated that everyone has their doubts when they do something for the first time. And I had mine, and I was definitely nervous. So in 1985, Sam actually got interviewed by Playboy magazine. Playboy magazine asked him if he had ever been electrocuted. They were trying to kind of tie in, well, you don't even know what it feels like. But they knew he was an electrician and asked him if he had ever been shocked, essentially. And he stated, I've been shocked before. I was hit with 480 volts one time and I did not feel anything. I have never experienced any pain and neither did they. It goes in the top of their head and out of their leg, just like the element on a toaster. Damn. When asked about the botched execution of Robert Wayne Williams, in which picture surfaced, Sam replied, I see them when they are removed from the chair. I have not seen any of them burn or mutilated in the 18 or 19 I've done. And now, y'all, what he's talking about there is, some pictures came out of a boxed execution of Robert Williams, and it's kind of gruesome. I'm going to post those on the patron page for you in the next, try to do it in the next 3 or 4 days so you can see what I'm talking about. I mean, they show a lot of burn marks and things like that. So you can make up your own, I guess, decision on that. But I do have those pictures, and I have pictures of Sam himself that I'm going to post on the Patreon. Now, his process was the same pretty much every time he performed an execution. He would arrive just shortly before. He would take his position behind the wall adjacent to that electric chair. He would wait for the prisoner to enter the chamber and be strapped in by prison security officers, then throw the switch, and he would depart just as secretly as he arrived. Now, that is in direct contrast to how his predecessor did it. If you remember, I told you that guy showed up like 2 days early, and he's checking straps and he's replacing straps, things of that nature. If they need it, he's checking the electricity, making sure everything's working correctly. Sam, he didn't give a shit. He showed up, you know, 2 hours before and just kind of hid out in the back until it was time for him to go in. But crazy that $400, that's what you got paid as the executioner for each one that you executed. Just bizarre through time as we've went through this whole story. And I mean, Woody and I brought you back to like BC, right? All of the crazy ways in which they did these executions, some of them pretty brutal. I mean, the thing where they stuck the, you know, the person inside of a fake pig or cow and would make it moo and all those things by putting pipes in it. So you're screaming and it sounds like you're mooing. That's nuts, y'all. That blew my mind. And I have a picture of that on the Bloody Angola Facebook page of what that looks like. If you want to check that out. Some exciting things coming up. Incidentally, obviously this is the part two of our execution series, and that kind of wraps that up. And we skipped a week before we dropped the part two, and we dropped an interview that we did with the brother of the gentleman who was killed by Corey Miller, C-Murder. Go check that out if you have not heard it yet. That guy actually flew in from Dallas to sit down with me and Woody and do that interview. And, you know, there's always two sides to every story, and we wanted him to give his side of that story. There's a lot of very high, powerful people, Kim Kardashian types, that have came out and they're, you know, they're defending Corey Miller. And this guy, he wants to defend his family, and they need some closure. And look, super awesome guy. We can't thank him enough for coming on and sharing his story and traveling out here to do it. Meant everything to be able to sit down and just tell his brother's story and his perspective of that, in his family's perspective of what they've had to deal with. People too often forget about the victims in these cases, especially when it's high profile people like C-Murder was. You get so wrapped up in what's going on with this guy that you forget there's victims on the other side of this that have a story, that are suffering and hurting. And it was really our honor to tell that story. This drops on Thursday, so unfortunately it'll actually be taking place while you're hearing this, unless you listen to it at like 5 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. But I'm honored to be able to speak, actually be the keynote speaker at the mayor's prayer breakfast for National Prayer Day. This goes on throughout the country. Communities get together. They have the religious leaders from each community. They say a few things, and they have like a keynote. Each mayor does this. And I was honored to have Mayor Gerard Landry of Denham Springs, Louisiana, ask me to be the keynote at that event. And I think I have something really good prepared that I'm going to present today, actually. Look, for all you patrons out there, I can't tell you, and I know me and Woody say it every episode, we're always going to say it every episode, we absolutely love and appreciate each and every one of you and the things that you do for us to support us. We could not do this show without you. There's a lot of expense that goes into this. The research time alone, y'all, probably about four to five hours a week just in research. Then we have to record it. We have to edit it. We have to master the audio and then put it up. And, you know, it's a full day. One of these episodes is a full day of work from start to finish. And we absolutely could not do it without y'all. Love y'all so much. Thank you so much. And we're gonna drop more bonus episodes here upcoming. We just dropped one, I think, like a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago. But as soon as Woody gets back in town, we're gonna drop another one. So look for that. Please check out all the other work that we do. Look, Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Real Life, Real Crime Original. I have a couple of podcasts, Exposed, Scandalous Files of the Elite. I enjoy doing that. Got, I think, 14 episodes of that up right now. Please check that out if you're so inclined. A little bit different than what we do on like Real Life, Real Crime Daily and this show, in that it's more society-based. So it's elite figures in society like P. Diddy, who's been in the news a lot lately. I have a series on him. Vince McMahon, the WWE owner that's a billionaire that is, you know, a piece of shit. And so much more on there. There's like 14 episodes. So check it out. Exposed, Scandalous Files of the Elite. And also, maybe you're not local to the area, but you like hearing about business owners and their journey through business, please check out Local Leaders of the Podcast. That was my original podcast that I started probably 5 years ago. And there's over 200 episodes of that featuring primarily Louisiana-based business owners in the Baton Rouge and Livingston Parish area. But it's very interesting. So many stories out there. Every business owner has a story, and I want to tell it. So check that out as well. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman. For Woody Everton, we are your host of Bloody Angola, a podcast 142 years in the making, the complete story of America's bloodiest prison. Peace.
I walk a straight line, shackled and chained. Oh, gruesome Gertie is calling my name. There is no mercy in this penitentiary. Just ask the Hill String Gang, Rango.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.